Genealogy by Tim, Season 3, Episode 1. Recorded Sunday, January 29th, 2023. It's been an exciting month in personal genealogy research. Most exciting because I found my way to another genealogy community, this one at the Genealogical Society of Pennsylvania. Also, while preparing my media galleries for web publication, I delved into a pair of business-owning family lines, and lastly, I made a little bit of progress on a long-standing family history mystery. All that coming up on Genealogy by Tim. I'd say the one thing that has enhanced my genealogy research more than just about anything else over the years has been participation in a monthly roundtable where I and people who share my passion for genealogy get together and share ideas. The original group in which I participated was started at the National Archives Mid-Atlantic region when it was on Chestnut Street in downtown Philadelphia. That was started by archivist Jefferson Moak. And I started attending those sessions pretty early in my career, if you'd call it that, of researching genealogy. I remember wandering in one day and aimlessly bopping around the visitor area when someone popped out and said to me, "Hey, we're doing a genealogy roundtable in the conference room. You want to come join us?" And I said, "Sure." It just happened to be the first Friday of the month, and the rest is history. I attended that group every first Friday that I could for the next 9 years or so. Somewhere around 2014 or 2015, the National Archives moved from Chestnut Street downtown to the far northeast of Philadelphia on Townsend Road. The group chose to remain downtown due to ease of access with public transportation and moved its location to the nearby Independence Branch of the Free Library of Philadelphia and remained there for several years. In 2017, I became a full-time teacher in the School District of Philadelphia, so I wasn't able to attend meetings regularly for about 3 years. I always looked forward to those summer months when I could rejoin the group, but there was an emptiness in my life when I wasn't able to make these meetings. When COVID happened, the meetings went virtual, and I was able to attend some through Zoom during that year, 2021 to 2022. Teaching was virtual as well, and I was able to sneak in some Zoom meetings here and there. It wasn't quite the same as joining the group in person, but it did satisfy that urge for a little while. Just last year, the old genealogy group found a new home at the Philadelphia City Archives at 6th and Spring Garden Streets, and this is an amazing place to meet as a group, talk out your brick walls and strategies, get some research done, and then the archives happen to be next to a Yards Brew Pub, so you can enjoy some food and beverages after all of your hard work and research. And this is kind of like a dream scenario for me because I love genealogy, I love brew pubs. Why not combine the two? Unfortunately, my day job prevents me from indulging in those pleasures. And since the threat of COVID has waned, the meetings at the City Archives have not been virtual. They've been in person only. So once again, I've found myself unable to attend, except for those summer months, which now in the middle of winter seem so very far away. And I got to thinking, you know, I live in a city of 1.5 million people. Somewhere around here, there's got to be 12 people who like to sit around a table once a month and talk genealogy. So I went online and first thing I thought was, what's the Genealogical Society of Pennsylvania doing? Are they doing anything in the evenings? Are they doing anything on the weekends? I remember attending a Third Thursday speaking event several years ago. I'm wondering if those are still a regular thing. and I discovered to my great joy that the Genealogical Society of Pennsylvania is now hosting a roundtable discussion, this one occurring on the second Saturday of each month. And I said, that's great. That is what I need in my life right now, another genealogy roundtable. So, to give the Genealogical Society of Pennsylvania its due, I renewed my membership and signed up for the roundtable. It's not quite the same because they're all new faces, but they're all people like me who love researching their family history, and they all have similar kinds of questions, and we go around the table and see what we can think of. The organizer of the meetings is Genealogical Society Treasurer Frank Straub, and he presented a tip of the month, and that is going to be a regular feature of these meetings. His tip this month was how to find Philadelphia City marriage records on the FamilySearch.org website through 1950. And those don't pop up when you do a regular search, but if you dig into the site a little and browse through some images, you can find those more recent marriage records through 1950. So that was very helpful, and I kind of decided to make the Genealogical Society of Pennsylvania my new Saturday hangout, and they're open on the second and fourth Saturdays of each month. So I visited the Society for the roundtable on January 13th, and I visited again just yesterday, just to hang around and do a little bit of personal research. It was pretty quiet there yesterday, and my focus there was to join the Genealogical Society's First Families lineage group. The Genealogical Society will give a special certificate to those who can prove that they are descended from ancestors of early Pennsylvania. They have three tiers of recognition. One from the mid-1800s, one from the early 1800s, and one from the 1700s. And since I'm already a member of Sons of the American Revolution, I think it should be possible for me to prove my lineage in the highest tier of the Genealogical Society's First Families group. So that's going to be a research goal of mine over the coming weeks, just to make sure that my application for that is filled out complete with I's dotted and T's crossed. While I was there yesterday, I got to talking with President Valerie Ann Lutz, and it was quite exciting, and we got to talking websites. She was telling me about how the Genealogical Society website is a WordPress, and mine is a Drupal, and all that good stuff, so it was really nice to talk to someone who's kind of into the same stuff that I am, and with any luck, we'll get to collaborate on some projects in the near future. Well, that was really exciting this month to become a part of a community once again after several years of not really having a home. I have one again at the Genealogical Society of Pennsylvania. Those who have been listening to the podcast over the last several months know that I have been stepping through each surname in my genealogy software, preparing the media galleries so that they will look better on my website. Last month, I started the C section of the alphabet with Sarah Calvert and went down a rabbit hole researching her name, not finding anything new, but eliminating some possibilities. This month I continued through the letter C and spent a lot of time on the Core family. The Core family is my paternal grandfather's mother's family, and they are one of the first families that I entered into my genealogy software many years ago, back in 2008. And as I've gone through some of those families, I can see just how far I've come as a genealogist. Some of those early ancestor profiles include only a birth record and a death record without a burial record. So what I used to do is just put in a birth and a death, and then for the burial, I would just include a picture of the gravestone in the ancestor's media gallery. So in the process of editing these media galleries, I had to, for several of these core ancestors, create burial events for them with the date and location of burial. and populate those events with pictures of the gravestones. For many years, much of what I've known about the Kaur family has come from a set of letters written from my Aunt Eileen, which is my grandfather's sister, to a member of the Kaur family named Jean. And this correspondence was a part of a family history project started by my dad's cousin, Gail. According to the letters, Gail got a 90 from a very picky teacher. And also according to the letters, the cores are beautiful. There's no dirt on them, which I don't know. I think everyone's got some dirt, but according to the letters, there's no dirt. John Kaur, born in Stewartstown, County Tyrone, Ireland, came to America in about 1878. There seem to have been siblings who have come along as well. There was a Joseph, a Patrick, and a Mary. According to the letters, Mary was already in the USA when John came. John is my direct ancestor. He's my paternal grandfather's maternal grandfather. According to the letters, he came to the USA at the age of 22 with his brothers and earned $1.50 a day soon after he arrived. Apparently, there were 7 girls and 3 boys. The letters don't indicate any knowledge of the father's name. It says the mother's name was Allen, but I believe it was Adams, according to death certificate information. The Kaur brothers, John and Patrick, started a wool waste recycling business at 1954 North 2nd Street in the Northern Liberty section of Philadelphia. That business became quite successful. I don't know exactly when the business began. However, according to a newspaper report on the 19th of January, 1905, the Kaur brothers' partnership split up and they each went their separate ways business-wise. John apparently continued in the wool waste manufacturing business, which is also described as a carpet and rug manufacturing business. So I'm assuming that he and his employees gathered wool waste, repurposed it, and manufactured carpets with it. That business continued on until John Kaur's death on the 31st of December, 1924. Several trade journals written some glowing obituaries of him and his business. I'd like to read one of them for you. This was published by the Journal of Commerce in 1925, and it is headlined, "An Excellent Career Ended. Announcement of the recent death of John Kaur, widely known in cotton and wool waste business, has occasioned profound sorrow and regret. Was widely known and esteemed for his strong qualities and personal character. The demise of Mr. John Kaur on Wednesday, December 31st, marked the termination of a career which had been active and useful in relation to important business interests, and the announcement of his death has come with a sense of deep personal loss and bereavement to all who had enjoyed the privilege of being brought within the sphere of his kindly and helpful personality and influence. The late Mr. Kaur is widely known in cotton and wool waste business located at 1954 North 2nd Street. He was treasurer of the Overbrook Carpet Company and vice president of Charles W. Paulson and Company. He developed a large and important patronage through the high quality of his service and the careful attention which he gave to the interest of his many patrons and customers. He was a man of great force and determination of character, and his breadth of idea and consistency of purpose were supplemented by the foundation traits of firmness, thrift, and industry. Mr. Kaur was born in County Tyrone, Ireland, in 1856 and came to America at the age of 22 years. He was a loyal and true businessman in every relation of life, and it is with a feeling of infinite tenderness and respectful appreciation that his hundreds of friends and acquaintances look upon his completed life work. He is an honorary member of St. San Salvador, number 283, Knights of Columbus, Order of Elks, and he is a member of the Holy Name Society, Society Vincent de Paul, Anti-Coban Republic Club. Mr. Kaur survived by his widow, Mrs. Mary Kaur, 3 sons and 3 daughters, John Kaur Jr., who will conduct the business, Edward Core, who was in the carpet business, and Joseph Core, who was studying for the priesthood. Mrs. John J. Kennedy, Miss Helen B. Core, and Miss Julia M. Core, all of whom live in the city, and a sister who lives in Ireland. His funeral took place from his late residence on Monday, January 5th. Solemn Requiem Mass was celebrated at the Church of Visitation, BVM, Lehigh Avenue, and B Street. Interment was made in the Holy Cemetery. That would now be known as Holy Cross Cemetery in Yeadon. The death of John Core will cause no interruption in the business, which will be continued by his son, John Core Jr., who was conversant with every detail of the business. So you can see the glowing remembrance of Mr. John Core. Apparently, he was a well-respected businessman in the wool waste recycling industry. John's brother, Patrick Core, apparently continued to be successful in business, and this is indicated by his massive gravestone at Holy Sepulchre Cemetery, which, you know, I have a picture of this gravestone with my bike next to it for scale, and it is pretty massive. And when the groundskeeper brought me out to the site at Holy Sepulchre, we pondered, how much do you think that thing weighs? I remember that. And yes, it is a very tall, very imposing structure, with several cousins of my great-grandmother, Julia Core, buried there. I still don't know much about either Joseph or Mary Core. It is known from the letters that Mary Core married a fellow named McGinnis, but I still haven't been able to trace that family very far since Mary's arrival and the birth of the McGinnis twins. It is known that one of them died at a relatively young age, but I still have to follow up and find out what happened to the other. Basic searches for death certificates and the like haven't revealed a whole lot, so that's going to be another project for another day, and I don't know anything yet about the brother Joseph, who apparently came over with John and Patrick. John Core, my grandfather's grandfather, married the mother of his children, Julia Foley, in 1888. They had 7 children in total. One child, a Julia Core, died in infancy, and the other 6 grew up to be those who were mentioned in the obituary. My grandfather's mother was also named Julia Core after the first Julia Core passed away. Locally famous among the Core children were John A. Core, who carried on the wool waste business, and also Joseph M. Core, who was Reverend Monsignor Joseph M. Core in the Philadelphia Archdiocese, who did much great work and was widely known as a priest in Philadelphia. And there are many more details that I'd like to share about the family, but in the interest of time, I will continue down the alphabet. I got all the way through the letter C in my gallery formatting project, and I began the letter D, and at the beginning of the letter D is the Dombach family. This is on my mother's side. This is my mother's 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 sister, Margaret Staff, married a fellow named Jacob Dombach. He had several children. One of those, George Washington Dombach, was a successful businessman out in Elwood City, which is in Lawrence County, Pennsylvania, near Butler. He ran a mercantile business and a grocery business in Elwood City, and later became the owner and proprietor of the Dombach and Brothers department store between 1896 and 1907, and then thereafter became the president of the Dombach Mercantile Company. He was prominent enough to be featured in the 20th Century History of Newcastle and Lawrence County, which was published in 1908. And that is from where I know most of what I know about him. A photo of the Dombach and Brothers storefront is up on the Elwood City Memories website. Looks like a very interesting building, a nice place to visit. Unfortunately, the building was destroyed by fire several years ago. So I spent several hours this month sprucing up the Dombach media galleries, and I came across a personal family tragedy. an outbreak of diphtheria was going around in 1890. Jacob Dambach lost three daughters to the illness within a span of a couple weeks. Cora May, Emma Caroline, and Sarah Ann. Condolences to the family were published in the Butler Citizen on the 21st of November, 1890. It reads as follows. The family of Jacob Dambach has been sorely afflicted, and they have the sincere sympathy of this community in their great bereavement. Within the past 2 weeks, they have lost three children from a fatal form of diphtheria. And that certainly was tragic, but I was pleased to learn of the surviving brother, George W. Dambach's success in business later in life. And these are some of the things I learned while organizing my media galleries for web publication this month. I have one more item of interest for you this month, and that is progress, which has been made on a long-standing family history mystery, this one out in Lancaster with the Klein family. And the Kleins are on my paternal grandmother's side. These are the ancestors who have come from Lancaster. My paternal grandmother's paternal grandmother was Cora Klein, who was born in Columbia, Lancaster. She had an older sister named Catherine Klein, who married a gentleman named Edward Donnelly. And it had always been a mystery to me what happened to Edward Donnelly. The two were married in 1886, but Edward does not appear with his wife in the 1900 census. I had assumed that he died, but I could not find any record of his death in Lancaster. It was always just kind of a mystery what happened. But through an accidental newspapers.com search, I found some clue what happened to him. First of all, several divorce announcements were published in 1902, and that gave me a clue that he was still alive around that time, though not living with his family. Didn't quite know what happened until yesterday when I stumbled upon this piece in the Lancaster New Era of December 28th, 1897, wherein it is written, Ed H. Donnelly, formerly of this place, that being Columbia, Lancaster, but now of Ouray, Colorado, sent to Mr. David Klein of Kleinsville a pair of mammoth Texan steer horns. A letter accompanying them said that while rounding up a herd of cattle, this beast had attacked him, and it was a fight to the death between them. The horns measure 3 feet, 3 inches across. They have been mounted by a Lebanon firm, Lebanon being a county in Pennsylvania. So Mr. Donnelly moved out to Colorado to be some sort of rancher, and Ouray was apparently a mining town, so I'm not quite sure how or why he moved away from his wife and children to Ouray, Colorado. But he appeared to be on good terms with the family, at least as of 1897. So he probably went out there for some sort of business opportunity, probably didn't come back. And by 1900, his wife began divorce proceedings, which were completed in 1902. Still don't know exactly what Edward's fate was. I don't have death information on him. I don't know if he survived his next cattle attack, if that happened, but I would be interested to know what happened to this gentleman after he left his family for Ouray. And by the way, if you Google up Ouray, Colorado, and look at some images of this place, it is a very lovely town nestled in the mountains of Colorado, and it is known by the nickname as the Switzerland of America due to the idyllic view of the place. So I'll link to that in the show notes. Check that out. If I were to suddenly disappear one day, you might look for me in Ouray, Colorado. That's it for this month. Coming up in February, the Genealogical Society of Pennsylvania is hosting a Winter Virtual Conference on Saturday, February 11th. This one is on records and background on researching your Irish and Scots-Irish. That does sound very interesting to me. I haven't yet decided whether I'll attend, but you'll hear. Later in the month, on February 21st, I will be attending my second genealogy roundtable at the Society. That is bound to be interesting. And of course, as always, I'll be marching through my ancestor surnames alphabetically. We'll see what the letters D and E have in store for us. That's next month on Genealogy by Tim.